Hello and welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky, and your co-host is Josh Arnold. And 2018, here we are.
Yeah, we're into the new year and off to... We have some really good guests that I think the listeners will appreciate, and lots of shows in the queue for the coming weeks.
Well, let's tell us who we have on here today and what the story is.
State Representative Diana DeSoglio, who's been on in the State House for several years and is seeking re-election, and this is a state election year. And then also, it's also a U.S. senatorial election year, and a candidate from the Republican Party who will hope to win the nomination and challenge incumbent Liz Warren is Beth Lindstrom. And she will be our second guest.
Alrighty then, so stay tuned. This is Trending Now with Josh Arnold. We're back. We'll be right back, too.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill. At the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings. With 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore, we have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is State Representative here in Massachusetts, Diana DeSoglio. Diana, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh, for having me on as a guest.
Well, I usually start out and ask our guests to give us the 3 or 4 minute bio. And why don't we start there and then we can get into some questions.
Sounds great. Thank you. Happy to discuss whatever you'd like.
Okay. You want to start?
From the start? I'll start talking.
Okay.
Sounds good. So thanks again for having me on, Josh. It's an honor and privilege to have the opportunity to be on your show. I've heard great things. And to be able to have, the use of the show as sort of a platform to reach people in my community and let them know what's been going on at the State House in Massachusetts. My name is Diana DeSoglio. I am one of the state representatives for the communities of Methuen, Lawrence, Haverhill, and North Andover, and that's the 14th Essex District, and I've been in the legislature now for, this is my third term, and my sixth year. I serve currently on the joint committees for mental health and substance misuse, election laws, education, and steering, and we've been working on a number of issues during the last several years, and just coming on your show today just to talk about some of the more recent things that we've been working on.
Great. So I looked through some of your legislative record, and I see that you've been advocating for more funding for substance abuse, misuse prevention, education, and treatment, and so forth. Tell us about that issue and what the legislation you've drawn up hopes to achieve.
Yeah, you know, it's actually, it's interesting that you would ask that because I actually just got done with a meeting with the North Shore Superintendents Association, they had, you know, some questions and some comments regarding substance misuse and addiction prevention and education efforts, you know, that we're working on across the Commonwealth, and, you know, how we can be helpful in the state legislature in assisting our schools, in particular with prevention and education and intervention efforts. Recently, we had a debate at the State House in the House of Representatives on an issue pertaining to funding for our public schools. We're going to set up an anti-addiction fund, an addiction prevention fund, in Massachusetts. We didn't end up actually, you know, being able to get that across the finish line in House of Representatives. Some of us were advocating for that strongly. We didn't end up getting that across the finish line, but part of what was included in that addiction fund was a certain amount of funding be allocated towards our Massachusetts public schools in order to assist them with intervention, prevention, education, social-emotional support, and training to be able to assist in whatever way they can students that are struggling with addiction, to try to prevent that student from that first, you know, time when they, you know, might have peer pressure or whatever else it is, you know, lack of coping skills, whatever it is that causes somebody to try to take that, you know, or to take that first pill. You know, a lot of that happens during youth. What we're trying to do is we're trying to get some of the funding in the state budget to go back to our public schools to assist our teachers, our superintendents, and our community leaders with helping these kids who, you know, are in that time in their life where there is a lot of peer pressure from taking that first pill. So we're working on trying to get the funding for those programs right now. And the efforts were unsuccessful in the House of Representatives. We did have a measure that we did vote on recently that didn't pass, but recently the governor actually came before us in the Mental Health and Substance Misuse Committee joint hearing that we had. I believe that was this week on Tuesday. He came before us, and he actually is going to be presenting the legislature with his version of an addiction fund that's going to be going to Massachusetts public schools as well. That's going to be more of a grant program that students will be able, the school districts will be able to access by applying and implementing in their schools. So the governor is working on it. We're working on it, and you know, trying to get that passed by April.
Great. Great. Now, some of the other work you've done, I know that you've had a bill in on domestic violence. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I filed this bill on domestic violence essentially after having met with a lot of advocates in my community who, you know, were doing a lot of advocacy work after we had a couple of tragic murders due to domestic violence. You know, as I told you, I hail from Methuen, but I do represent Lawrence, North Andover, and Haverhill as well. And in Methuen, we actually had a tragedy. There was a young woman killed by her romantic partner. She was actually strangled by a romantic partner in front of her young, I believe he was a four-year-old little boy. And, you know, she was, you know, somebody who was herself an advocate for domestic violence prevention, you know, and obviously due to her own personal experiences with it. So this caused, you know, an outrage in the community and really got a lot of people inspired to start advocating, you know, and unfortunately it's an awful circumstance, but motivated people to, you know, start saying, hey, we need to do something about this. This isn't just this one circumstance. This is happening in so many different circumstances, and people are, you know, remaining silent out of fear of what their domestic partner might do, out of fear of, you know, not being able to maintain themselves financially. A lot of people aren't financially independent, and they're financially dependent on an abusive partner, so they have a problem coming forward. So we were talking about different ways that we might be able to identify, you know, some of the areas where we're failing at helping these victims to be able to come forward. So I presented a piece of legislation after talking to some of the local advocates, and you know, by no means is this a, you know, a solution to the overarching, you know, problem. But it was just one additional thing that we could do to try to help, just one additional thing that we could do. And what it is there's a lot of conversations that go on at barbershops and at beauty salons, at nail salons. And we're finding that is especially the case in one of the communities I represent, which is Lawrence. A lot of, you know, my community members in Lawrence, it's cultural. A lot of us hang out at the beauty salons and beauty parlors and barbershops for a while, and we become friendly with our hairdresser or with our barber, and, you know, it's essentially a little community in and of itself. But something that hairdressers and that, you know, nail technicians and people that work in the beauty industry overall, I guess, estheticians, so on and so forth, have is that they have direct access to be able to see skin, to be able to see, you know, bruises. A lot of times when there's domestic violence going on, Josh, a partner will strike a victim in an area that
doesn't show,
can't be seen.
Yeah.
It can't be seen. You know, it's hidden underneath somebody's clothes, or it's on the scalp underneath the hairline, so that it can't be seen, so that, you know, it's not noticeable to people that know the victim that they're being abused physically. So just one of the things that, you know, we thought might be helpful, and again, this isn't a catch-all, but it was just one thing that we thought we could do, is to offer training services to people who work in the beauty profession, hairdressers, barbers, nail technicians, so on and so forth, that just provides them with a quick training, an hour-long training that says, if you have somebody who's coming in that has identified, you know, that has signs of, you know, being abused, you know, children as well, we think about, you know, a lot of times we have, you know, parents who are abusing a child. The child is afraid to come forward because, you know, their parents right there with them, but the beauty person or the hairdresser might be able to notice bruises under the scalp, under the shirt, whatever it might be. And just provide that person with some resources and with just a little bit of training so that they are aware of, you know, some actions that they might be able to take. So I filed a bill regarding that, just to provide some additional training to those professions that, you know, we thought might be helpful. And it's been endorsed by several different organizations, you know, with pertaining to domestic violence. The YWCA came out to support the legislation, saying that they believe that it will help people in the community. And then we had a number of, you know, local beauty professionals come out and talk about how, you know, it would be very useful for them in their profession.
Years ago, and it's not that long ago, but I remember it, certainly, and they had a program called Drop a Dime, and it was back when, before the rampant use of cell phones, when they actually had pay phones. You put a dime in, and then a quarter, and you made a call. But the idea was to drop a dime to the local law enforcement agency if you knew or suspected somebody to be involved in some form of drug transactions. It was a volunteer program, and it became, I think it was a national program or what, but it had a lot of success. Do you envision that some type of program like that would be developed or could be developed, or is that already in motion?
So there are different numbers that you can call. There are similar efforts that are out there right now that provide a, you know, safe method to get in touch with somebody who can provide assistance, who you know, is either a counselor, or you can obviously call your local police station as well. There's obviously one avenue to take with these people in this particular profession. What the goal of the legislation is. You know, again, it's not to mandate that they have to do certain things. It's to provide them with the tools necessary if they feel that, you know, somebody is being abused, or they do want to, like you say, you know, they want to drop a dime.
Yeah.
To provide them with those phone numbers. It's to provide them with those resources and those organizations that they can reach out to, like you said, and to say, you know, what should you do if somebody comes in with bruises on them, you know, or they seem like they're being intimidated, or they seem like they're fearful, or they have a conversation with you as their hairdresser because they've established a friendship with you and it's a trusting relationship, but they're afraid to come forward to the police because they're afraid of retaliation from their partner. What do you do in a situation like that? You know, and that's a tough call for anybody to make. I think we all have been in situations in which, you know, we suspect that somebody is being abused, whether it be physically, emotionally, or verbally. And, you know, you sit there and you question yourself and you go, you know, I really want to help, but I don't know what the course of action is to be able to help this person or this individual to, you know, to overcome this and to get out of that abusive situation. or how to talk to this person about it, and be helpful in whatever way I can. So I think that, you know, the goal of the legislation, again, is just to be helpful to the people in that profession where people are coming in, they're having these conversations, and they want to be able to be helpful, but they don't necessarily, you know, you don't go to become a nail technician and get trained how to be a therapist, you know?
Oh, no,
same with
see.
A hairdresser. Yeah. Same thing with a radio talk show host, right? But this is one particular profession where, because they have direct access to these individuals for an extended amount of time in a one-on-one interaction where there's a lot of conversations that are being had, and that relationship is developed over the course of months to years, you know, and they do have access to seeing that person's skin and having those direct conversations with them, you know, I mean, the people that are in the profession are asking for the tools necessary to be able to handle stuff like this.
So that's great. That's certainly well, it's a good topic for you to be working on, and let's hope the legislation can advance further.
Listen, I have to jump off, and I'm really sorry to have to cut you a little bit short, but I had it scheduled in here from 10 to 10:15.
Yeah, we're good.
And I'm right at my next meeting, and I got people here actually looking at me. I'm sitting in my car having this conversation.
Okay.
And they're waiting outside of the window for me to jump out of the car and jump off this call. So
Well, it's good to be in demand, too.
So, Josh, listen, just to wrap up, I do want to offer my contact information because I feel like, you know, these radio interviews are very quick and, you know, we have an opportunity to kind of, you know, brush the surface, but we don't have the opportunity to get really in-depth with a lot of things and to answer follow-up questions, so on and so forth. So I do want to give an opportunity to any of the listeners that are out there, if you do want to follow up with me on these or any other issues and ask some questions regarding what's going on in the state legislature, and you happen to live in any of the communities that I represent, Methuen, Lawrence, Haverhill, or North Andover, please feel free to reach out to me. My phone number is 978-390-0408, and my email is diana.dizoglio@mahouse.gov. I look forward to hearing from anybody that would like to reach out to me and talk to me about issues of concern to you in our communities. And I thank you again, Josh, for having me on today. It's an honor and a privilege, like I said, to have the opportunity to be on your show. So thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you, Diana. Take care. Have a good day.
Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings, with 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore. We have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposits, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Get the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Fabulous Fridays and Sunday brunch are back at the Gloucester House. World-renowned for its lobster dishes and fresh seafood specialties, the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, uses only locally caught, fresh North Atlantic seafood, offering traditional dining as well as catering to your private function needs. There is something for everyone and every occasion at the Gloucester House. Owned and operated by the Linquata family since 1959, they offer fabulous Friday lunch and dinner specials. And don't forget Sunday brunch from 10 to 2. For more information, go to GloucesterHouse.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Beth Lindstrom, who is a candidate for U.S. Senate. Beth's the former campaign manager for the successful run of Scott Brown for the U.S. Senate in Massachusetts. She's also been employed by former Governor Mitt Romney, running the state lottery. She seeks the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate to square off against incumbent Democrat Liz Warren. If she secures the Republican nomination, Beth will be the first Republican woman in the history of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to run for the U.S. Senate. Beth, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Usually start out and say, give us your 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we can get into some questions.
Sure, sure. Well, thanks again for having me on. I am a mother and have 3 boys, live in Groton, Massachusetts with my husband, Ray. I grew up in Connecticut with my mom coming from Sutton, Mass, and my dad comes from Worcester, so I believe I have some Massachusetts roots. But they were divorced when I was younger. I worked a lot when I was little and put myself through University of Connecticut. And shortly after graduation, I moved to Massachusetts. So in 1987, I started at the Republican State Party, where we worked for 3 years cultivating candidates and electing Governor Bill Weld, Paul Fulci, and Joe Malone. And not only did we elect them, but we elected enough state senators to sustain Governor Weld's veto, which was important. So worked real hard then and was an advisor to Governor Romney on his gubernatorial bid, as you mentioned, ran Scott Brown's first campaign, and most recently was president of a super PAC helping Charlie Baker be elected governor. So that's a little bit of my political background. I've held 2 senior positions in government. First one was down at the lottery, as you mentioned, the first female executive director of the $3.5 billion operation then, which was the most successful in the country and the most efficient. And while I was down there, I had a 17-month-old and a 7-week-old and put myself through graduate school at Northeastern University and while working full-time. So I was busy. Another senior position that I held was on Governor Romney's cabinet as Director of Consumer Affairs and Business Regulation, where we did many great things for consumers and businesses. One we got major recognition for from the Pioneer Institute, which was culling out unnecessary business regulations for companies and businesses to help them run smoother. And the other is we introduced competition into the auto insurance market. We started that process working across the aisle with the Democrats up in the legislature. So that's my senior government experience, but I've also been involved in 4 startup companies, one that was my own and put money into. So I understand how hard it is to start a business here in Massachusetts. So when Elizabeth Warren says, you know, you didn't build that, I disagree. People do work hard to build these companies. And lastly, I am a small business owner currently. So I have a small business in Groton, Massachusetts. So I understand what it's like to pay a payroll and to understand the cost of paying the bills at the end of the month. And Elizabeth Warren doesn't have that experience. But let me, further say a couple more words on why I got into this race. We need someone in Massachusetts who's going to represent the people and not someone who is out there running for president like Elizabeth Warren is planning to do. So
About a year ago, I had a close friend go into the hospital and end up passing away after 4 months. And this is when I was contemplating running for office. And after that, I thought to myself, you know what? I will challenge myself and I will step into this race because I feel strongly that Massachusetts does need a person who's going to represent the people here. And so I stepped in, and now I'm on the path running for the seat, and I hope to gain some support.
Okay. The recent tax debate on restructuring the U.S. tax code brought the usual and expected party rhetoric, with Democrats claiming the rich would get richer, the poor would get poorer. Incumbent Liz Warren has vowed to repeal the recently passed tax bill. What's your take on her ability to accomplish that, the repeal, and what are some of the ways you and Senator Warren differ on this issue?
I think one of the major ways we differ is that Elizabeth Warren thinks government should be involved in every aspect of your life, and I don't. I believe in smaller government. I also believe that it's government doesn't create jobs, and businesses do. So this is why I agree with the tax reform and the president's efforts here, because when you put more money back in the pockets of people who actually earn it, that's better spent than having the government tell you how to spend your money. So we offered a challenge back in the beginning of this year where we said to Senator Warren, you know, if the Democrats get control of the Congress, which taxes would you put back in place? And it's really hard for her now to... She says she's going to change things, so she says she's going to raise more taxes. But we're seeing over, you know, 2 million people in this country have already benefited from a bonus or higher wages or their companies increasing their charitable giving and their research and development plans in the future. So the bottom line and difference is I believe that businesses create jobs and create more taxpayers. And Elizabeth Warren just thinks it should be a shift in money.
Okay. Explain to us the issues relating to the medical device tax. What's your position, and is it the same or similar than that of Senator Warren?
Sure. Well, back last year, the end of last year, we had pushed hard on repealing and asking, I sent a letter in October to Senators Markey and Warren, to repeal the medical device tax. Now, what this is a 2.3% tax on revenue. And medical devices are such things as surgical equipment, MRIs. There are three states in the country that have big medical device industries. Massachusetts is one of them. In 2012, Elizabeth Warren said that she would repeal this tax. This came along with the Affordable Care Act. And so it was on hiatus for 2 years, but back last year it was going to kick back in January 1st. And I talked to many people in the industry, specifically one gentleman who's HR for a medical device company, and he said, Beth, this is the difference between the 600 jobs staying here in the United States and being moved to the United Kingdom. So this has a big impact. There's 480 organizations in Massachusetts, 200 of which have less than 10 employees, and that has real impact onto a company's bottom line. So this was real important. This is representing the people in Massachusetts, where Elizabeth Warren forgets where she's from. She's too busy running for president. But what she did do is Markey, after the beginning of the year, filed a bill to repeal the medical device tax, and she co-sponsored, and I believe that's for political cover. But I feel good that we were raising this issue because it's really important to the businesses in Massachusetts.
Presidential midterm elections are always something of a crapshoot in terms of the party of the president adding or subtracting seats in the House and the Senate. This cycle for 2018 has the added dimension of an extremely controversial incumbent president who on any day can ignite controversy on a range of issues and political themes. How difficult is it, and what are the challenges you and other Republicans face seeking office given the ups and downs with Republican President Donald Trump in the White House?
Well, here's my position on our president, that I would be with him when it's right for people of Massachusetts, and I will disagree when it's not. I'd always respect the office of the president, but I've sat on boards and I've been on executive teams, and when you always check the box and agree with the president or never say anything, then you're not doing your job. And I would be that way for the people of Massachusetts. So voters need to look at the person running and being able to make that judgment. They have to see that Elizabeth Warren, within 3 months, if she's reelected, she will be going to New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Iowa running for president. And that leaves the people of Massachusetts behind. So there's a very big difference in this upcoming election and a contrast between myself and Elizabeth Warren.
Okay. I read in your campaign somewhere that you've embarked on what's being termed a working together tour. Can you explain what that is and what information or what are your expectations? What will come out of that?
Sure. We are going around the state and organizing a few groups of listening tours with businesses and business owners that we want to listen and say, what is impeding you from growing jobs? What are the impediments for growth in your company? And so what we're hearing from folks is that there's overregulation and, specifically, some the red tape going through, whether it's buying a home in the bank, getting a loan from the bank, going and buying a home, and all the paperwork that has to happen. So we want to make sure there's consumer protection, but also it's the consumers who are saying, I just want to get to the bottom line, and all this paperwork and the redoing of all of this is problematic. It puts more costs on a company. In addition, it's minimum wage conversations. I don't think people are adverse to minimum wage, but mandating it, it's not a one-size-fits-all. And I think that's the same with, the regulatory environment. What's been going on with the CFP board and Dodd-Frank, it's like, the regulations for the big banks, are fine, but when it hampers small community banks for lending and growing jobs, that becomes a problem. So this is, it's all interrelated. But going back to some of the minimum wage, it comes from someplace. Money comes from someplace. So if you increase here, it's got to come from someplace over there. And this is where I have experience as a small business owner. And, understanding that there's sometimes just the business model, the way it is, there's a finite amount of money that comes in the door. And you have to pick and choose where to put it. So if you increase wages, then you have to have one less staff person. I think all the assumption that business owners are duplicitous bothers me too, because I think most people understand it takes good people to run businesses. You want to reward them. You want to be able to pay them. But you have to do it in a balance.
Okay. As we speak, Washington is looming in a crisis, I guess if you want to call it a crisis, a possible government shutdown. Any thoughts about that?
Sure. Now, I think there's a lot of good people who will sit around the table and want to have good discussion on immigration reform. But, Senator Warren, and the Democrats are planning on shutting down the federal government over a failure to get their way on immigration. And this is government at its worst. Shutting down the government will hurt people, that rely on federal aid, like the elderly and the disabled, children and their families. So deliberately inflicting harm on people because of a failure to get their way is just wrong. And Senator Warren is not representing the people who elected her. I mean, she, to be able to, dig your feet in. Now, the bill that's coming out of the House has the repeal of the medical device tax in it. Oh, my goodness, here's an example of this is an area that will help your state and help your constituents. But to go on the floor and filibuster over because you don't get your way and you want to have a standoff with the president, this is just wrong. This is why government is not working. And, that's the reason why I want to go to Washington, to help people and not hurt people. But also in the bill coming from the House is reinstating money for the Children's Health Insurance Program. This is what Elizabeth Warren has been railing against and saying, we need to fund that. Well, here you go. You have two major pieces that are helpful for our state. And she's digging in and going to filibuster just because she doesn't get her way. That's just wrong.
This one's kind of a long question, but I'm going to run at it. Looking at issues of ideology that separate Republicans and Democrats has historically been a swinging pendulum. Issues like conservation of land, breaking up monopolies, ushering in better working conditions for employees, and permitting unions to grow and expand were all part of the legacy of Republican President Theodore Roosevelt. President Kennedy in 1961 wanted to get out of what he viewed as the country's stagnation by invigorating the U.S. economy with through a tax cut, arguing at the time the rising tide would lift all boats. Grover Cleveland once proclaimed, before you could run for office, you must first stand for something. Beth, you seek the nomination for the Republican Party in Massachusetts. So how, in the words of President Cleveland, what does Beth Lindstrom stand for, and how does that, in your view, reflect the needs and positions of the citizens of Massachusetts you seek to represent?
Well, we've had a long history in Massachusetts where our politicians would be active in their elections, but after the election, they'd come together and actually make progress for the people. We're not seeing that anymore right now, especially with Senator Warren. For me, it's about government doesn't create jobs, businesses do, and it's about jobs. I want to be the job senator because, as JFK said, less taxes means more money to create more jobs, and that lifts all boats, right?
Right.
So that is a key principle to me. Elizabeth Warren is so interested in running for president and appealing to her far liberal progressive base that may not even exist in majority in Massachusetts. And that's her agenda. And that's where we've gone astray. JFK lowered taxes. So if you're not so far, you know, to an extreme, there's a lot we can agree upon. There's a lot that can be done for the people of Massachusetts. And I want to be that person to make progress.
I'm sure you have friends that live in other states, maybe people you went to college with, people you grew up with, people you've been associated with business. And they say, gee, I know Beth for years. She'd be a great U.S. senator. I'm going to write her out a check. The question, what I'm getting at is how much of an issue is it or should it be the extent to which candidacies for any office in any state are driven by people who don't live there? And I say that because if you look at the people who contribute to campaigns, it doesn't all come from Massachusetts. Should it? Should there be limitations on who can give? I mean, the Supreme Court probably would say that's a violation of freedom of speech, that you can't do that on the one hand. On the other hand, what does it say about a candidacy where 50% or 75% of the money you're bringing in comes from other states or other countries?
Well, we live in the 21st century, and when your storefront is your website, you cannot prevent people from donating to you from across the states and across the country and across the world. So there's a different opportunity there. I think with Senator Warren, she's speaking to a very liberal, progressive group of people that may not be representative of Massachusetts. I'm not a self-funder. I will be outspent, but I'm working to get my message out there so I can get people in Massachusetts to support my candidacy. And that would be nice if to raise money from people in Massachusetts. But with Elizabeth Warren, she is running for president. So there's an agenda there that reaches beyond the Massachusetts borders. So I think in this race specifically, this is an exception to who is interested in this race. And I hope to get more people interested in my candidacy because of the contrast against Elizabeth Warren.
JFK was in his day, and I bring him up because the seat that you're running for was held by him. In his day, when he stepped into the presidential arena to seek the presidency, the leading liberal of the day was Eleanor Roosevelt, and she thought he was a conservative Democrat. She wasn't going to support him until it came down to him and Richard Nixon, and Kennedy looked a lot better than Richard Nixon to Eleanor Roosevelt. Elizabeth Warren, if you track her, she seems to be gravitating even further and further to the left because, as you say, she appears to be looking for an office beyond what would happen if she were reelected to the Senate. How does that fit in with representing the people of the state?
Well, you look at an example of the 21st Century Cures Act, where this was a bill that passed last or December 2016, where all of our congressional delegation voted for it, except for Elizabeth Warren. And what this bill did was to be able to enable innovative drugs to come to market sooner, but in addition, to have millions and millions of dollars to come to Massachusetts to help with our opioid crisis. And she took the opportunity to vote against it because Bernie Sanders did. So here's a race to the left to see who could be more against, again, sticking your feet in the sand, that does not represent the interests of Massachusetts. And there's a very good example of why people need to change.
Do you think the fact that you're a woman will help you gain the nomination for the Republican Party, because that somehow might create a better platform for the Republicans to overtake Senator Warren?
Well, I have a resume, and that's what I can run on. I happen to be female, and I think that it does negate the gender issue. But I think people need to judge who is the best person to go up against Elizabeth Warren in the general. And I believe I'm that person for all my attributes, and I hope to convince voters of the same.
Okay, what there's a characterization of Liz Warren saying that what she saw her role to be was really not about the presidential politics, but she wanted to be a writer, a teacher, and a rock thrower. And that struck me because it has a certain obstructionist to it, and it kicks into this theme of we can't agree on anything. It's either our way or it's your way. There is no in between. Socrates wrote, "Democracy at its best comes from a contrast of opinions." But since the early to mid 90s, there's been an incredible polarization in Washington. The notion that when Tip O'Neill was Speaker of the House, and he would, they would agree to disagree. And no matter where they stood on the issues, they still played cards on Thursday nights and drank scotch together. I'm going to bet that doesn't happen very much in these days. And the rock-throwing comment was indicative of a changed era. Where do you stand? Are you going to be a better rock thrower? I mean, people elect you. Are you going to be a better rock thrower, or are you going to be someone who doesn't throw rocks but does something different? How are you similar or the same or different?
Sure. She said that she would write books. She wanted to write books, teach, and throw rocks. And we see this time and time again when you look at the tax reform vote, where she had the opportunity to stand up for people in Massachusetts, and she did not, because she just, before even learning anything about the bill, she just says no and wants to throw rocks. There's a difference between tone and temperament between the two of us. And I've had a history of working across the aisle, making friends, creating relationships. That's what it's all about. She has taken this stance where, I mean, if you watch any of her videos and the shaking of the hand and the anger, I mean, no one wants to work with someone like that. And that's what it's all about. Those are the relationships. That's how you sit down and play cards and make friends and try to work to get some common ground to make progress for people. So when this comment that she said, I would be a very different senator, someone who people could be proud of, and not someone who's just out there angry and throwing rocks.
What are some of the other if I said to you, give me three things that Liz Warren has done as a U.S. senator that you do differently, what are they?
Well, first would, as I have promised, if elected, I would make sure that I file a bill to repeal the medical device tax and work with people across the aisle, anybody of goodwill who would help me do that. So if that's still in play, that's the first thing I would do differently. Second, the 21st Century Cures Act. I mean, I wouldn't just stick my feet in and not vote for a bill because I needed to go farther left or right of somebody to just prove that, I can be appealing in a presidential race. And third, this whole writing books and throwing rocks, I would start off by listening to the people of Massachusetts. Elizabeth Warren came back and is doing some tours of Massachusetts because she knows that she has some high negatives in her numbers. I think you start there. If you're starting in year six, just starting to listen to the people in Massachusetts, then you haven't been listening, and that's wrong. I would start first by listening to the people in Massachusetts, and then let what they're saying, like in this business tour, understand. Let them create the policy. I'm not going to go have it dictated to me by someone in Washington. It's the people of Massachusetts. That's who you represent, and that's what I would do differently.
What are some of the other thank you. What are some of the other issues that are floating out there that you think are important to weigh in on? The public should know about you. And I say that because candidates don't. There's no one size fits all. It's not uniform. All Republicans stand for this. All Democrats stand for that. It's change and it continues to evolve. And where do you stand on some of the social issues?
Well, let me just go back because to answer where I thought you were going in the question, and I want to make a point of it because it is about being a job senator. Because what's at the crux of society is to having a good wage and a job. Because you put dinner on the table, you create dignity when people have work and jobs. And so we have a rich environment here in Massachusetts with such great resources. And you have to keep on making sure you support that. I'm not quite sure she's had a lot of conversations with our business community. Now, there's a lot of people you need to represent, and you have to make sure you take care of those who cannot take care of themselves. And that's important, too. But there's a lot of people who are philanthropic. And I think, again, where Elizabeth Warren paints with a broad brush that business owners don't have a philanthropic bone in their body really angers me because, who are the first people that come to community banks to ask to sponsor their softball team and their little league and their bowling team or whatever? So, there's a lot of giving out there, but if you don't have an environment where the economy can thrive, then all these things kind of fall by the wayside. We've seen that, in 2008 when we had, a dip in the economy. So, I did a startup company then, and, it went out of business because, with what was going on with the economy. So I put a lot of, money at risk to try to create jobs, create a business. And, and because of what was going on in Washington and happening, it failed. But I certainly learned from that experience. So my point is that, as you went back to the JFK quote, a rising tide lifts all boats. We have to make sure we continue to focus because when you do have a good economy, you can create jobs, create taxpayers, but also create the philanthropic giving because that's what our communities are all about. And those help a lot of people and those that need that help. So that would be important to me to make sure those things are first and foremost. And let me also add our veterans. These are people who have fought for our country. We need to make sure we support them in what we do, coming back into the community, transitioning back in, and making sure that they are integral members of our community. Because we owe everything to them because of their sacrifices. So I want to make sure I make that clear. I think that's been overlooked lately in Elizabeth Warren's agenda.
That's great. You've got another 10 minutes to go. Issues like fiscal conservatism or abortion, gay rights, you don't stand where a conservative Republican says you're more of a centrist. And so tell us about that.
So where I stand is I'm a fiscal conservative. As I just stated before, I think that's at the crux of our communities. We need to make sure we have a good economic environment. With regard to gay marriage, that's been settled, long ago in Massachusetts. It shouldn't be a campaign issue. We want to make sure there isn't discrimination. With regard to a woman's right to choose, I support that. But I also believe we need to find, common ground areas where we can make progress to protect life, such as parental consent and policies that encourage adoption. And where I differ from Elizabeth Warren is that I disagree on partial birth abortion. So, you know, that's where we differ. So, but again, hopefully those will not be issues of the campaign. I want to focus on the jobs, the economy, and how we continue, and how I could work with Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito. And here you have an expert on health care. You have an expert and a very popular governor. So I wanted, and who I have known for years, would love to be able to work with him and create an even stronger bond between Washington and Massachusetts to the benefit of the voters.
One of the things that that was true of Scott Brown when he ran for and got elected to the U.S. Senate is he was considered a lunch pail employee supporter. He related to the average person who brought their lunch to work, and historically that had been one of the calling cards of the Democratic Party. And yet, even though he was a Republican, he appealed to the everyday person. That seems to be a focus of your campaign. And I'm wondering, has the Democratic Party, from your viewpoint, shifted? Are they becoming more high income level people? Than it were perhaps during the Ted Kennedy era?
Well, I think, you know, what I stand for is, you know, smaller government, but protecting those that need to be protected. And, you know, with Scott's first race, you know, with JFK saying, you know, we can lower taxes, that was the type of Democrat that was born in Massachusetts, where you would be able to agree with, yeah, we need to have a good economy. We need to be able to put money back in people's pockets. So when people heard that JFK said we can lower taxes, they said, you know what? That was my parent as a Democrat. I guess I can vote for Scott Brown because, you know, I can relate to that. Scott was very relatable. And when it comes to my candidacy, you know, I've got a family. I'm a small business owner. This is how I'm relatable. My sons, I've got three sons. One borders Asperger's, one is ADHD, and one is dyslexic. I've been that parent that has had to deal with some of those challenges with these kids growing up. They're in their 18 to 22 now, but still, those are things that I relate to. I understand those needs as a parent and what you need to do to make sure that your kids have opportunity and can thrive. So I believe I'm a relatable person, and you know, I have empathy, I have sympathy. I just am someone who believes that we need to keep the money in the pockets of the people that earn it, and that's better spent than having government spend your money.
Great. A few minutes left before we wrap up. Any concluding thoughts you want to offer?
Well, we have a primary process, and right now we have a convention in April 28th. What I'm doing now is talking to people in the Republican town committees and recruiting delegates. And so anybody who would be interested in my candidacy and is a registered Republican before December 31st of last year and would be willing to be a delegate, certainly go to BethForSenate.com and contact us, and we can talk to you about the delegate process. Or if you want to get involved in the campaign, we've got we're growing, we're building, we're getting people every day who say, you know what, I like your chances, and I'd really like to see someone defeat Elizabeth Warren. So they can come check us out there.
Great. Very well. If we could get Senator Warren on here, would you debate her?
Well, I think I have to get through the convention, and I have to get through the primary, which is in September.
Okay.
But I would be happy to have conversations when appropriate and discuss the state of Massachusetts.
Would you be interested in debating with the other Republican candidates seeking the...
I think, sure, that will come in time.
Okay.
And, happy to have those conversations.
Super. Thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold.
Thanks, Josh. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Get the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Ever wish that help with your business was as nearby as your next-door neighbor? At Cape Ann Savings Bank, we're the folks who have helped our neighbors build prosperous communities since 1846. And we invite you to give us a call, discuss your vision, and learn how we can help you grow your business. We're here for you. You have questions. We have answers. Just give us a call, 888-283-CASB, or visit capeannsavingsbank.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
So we're back with Trending Now. Interesting conversation. One of the things I would like to have asked or just brought up when a Republican talks about smaller government is how these rules are coming in now to take away states' marijuana rights. States voted for marijuana. The federal government's going to come in and say, no, you can't do that. The federal government lowers taxes ostensibly. And as this candidate just mentioned, money's got to come from somewhere. So where does the lowering of the taxes come from? Well, it's projected, of course, that it's going to take a hit in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the so-called entitlement programs. And I just don't know with that, with the behavior that goes on, from the president, the unbelievably absurd behavior, as you and I were just discussing off air, how do you get to the middle anymore? How does that happen?
I don't know. There seems to be, in my view, too many people are invested in the fight than they are in the solution. And for them, the solution is the fight. It's not coming up with... Ronald Reagan was an admired president and is the one people talk about. When Republicans talk about their fallback is to Reagan, Democrats, they talk about Roosevelt or Kennedy. But Reagan would go to the a Democratic Congress, and he'd walk away with 50 or 60% and say,
that's 30, 40 years ago, as you mentioned. And so,
but that doesn't happen today.
Well, that's my point. So what do you do? And your candidate was just talking about 21st century over and over again. So it's the 21st century. What do we do?
Well, you got to get people. I think there has to be an awakening that what's happened it has been permitted to happen for the last 20 or 30 years. The galvanizing polarization of issues, or just not resolving to do anything, doesn't work. And until the voting public gets up and says, "I've had enough. I'm not going to take it anymore," it's going to continue because people know they can get away with it. If you look at the amount of money, the first thing you do when you get elected is you start raising money for the next time you run for office.
Well, I'm just reading online here while you were talking. I was just reading about how Trump is campaigning for the next presidential election. So we got 3 years down the road, and here we are. And of course, Hillary Clinton did that. The Clintons did that since, when did Obama get elected, 08 first time? Yeah. I mean, they've been campaigning since 08. And I agree with this lady. I do think that's exactly what Warren is doing. She's campaigning for president. And
if you look at her campaign finance returns for 2017, you could take the states or countries where her money's coming from and say, you flash up a picture of Spain or Hawaii or wherever, and it looks like
Well,
a travel app.
At least those are non-adversarial companies, countries rather.
I think it's great that Warren Beatty's wife, Annette Bening Beatty, is a contributor to Liz Warren's campaign, and maybe they'll start making more movies here in Massachusetts and help our economy. But I don't think that's probably why she gave the money, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, well, what are some of the things you're working on?
Dr. Sapphire, the superintendent of schools for Gloucester, was to be our third guest today and had to change. So he will be one of our guests next week. He'll be the third guest next week. And then we have some other people at the local levels of government and some people that we're working on in some social issues and just... everyday job kind of things that want to come on, or in a couple of book authors. So, yeah.
All right. Sounds good. That's Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, producer and engineer Bill Proposky. This is Trending Now with Josh Arnold. We'll be back next week.